chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Yo, this is Michael Payne, and I host the Michael and Marcel Show on FUBAR Radio every Wednesday from 4 till 6 p.m. Thanks for staying at home. The only thing we want you to catch is a vibe. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Game Day Gaster on FUBAR Radio.
My guest today is Paul Kassar. Hello, Paul.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good, thanks, mate. Bit flustered. Don't know where my mics are. So
no. Well, I mean, we're sitting here, and there's about six of them around us. So
okay. Well, we're gonna do the first track of the show. Delve into my iPod, and we'll see if this. Hopefully, I always hope that this is an embarrassing one because it'll make the guest feel
a bit more
at ease.
Just make me feel better about it.
About everything. Let's see what we got. Here we go. Yep, this is pretty embarrassing. This is Sunburned Hand of the Man, Camel Backwards.
Camel Backwards?
I mean, we'll see how long this lasts. God, that was Sunburned Hand of the Man. Have you ever, Paul, bought an album just because you liked the cover and then put it on your iPod and then it gets played in a radio show? That's what just happened to me.
No, that was a good example of it.
A great example.
Got a music for serial killers.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I haven't got a massive amount against that song, really. But, I mean, it's the kind of song, definitely, that when I started this show, I was like, well, I hope that Sunburned Hand of the Man album doesn't pop up at any point.
Well,
that was mainly because I like the name, really.
It is a great name.
Sunburned Hand of the Man is a funny...
Sunburned Hand of the Man.
Name for a band.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's very cool.
So, yeah, I'll get that. And then I remember getting home and being like, oh, it's that. But I just put everything on my iPod.
Mm.
Because at some point I might get into
it. You have to. Yeah, just be ruthless. Put everything on there and, yeah.
That album was from... I bought that on what at the time was one of the best days of my life.
Okay.
I went to... Me and my girlfriend at the time went to London.
Right.
We had a very short-lived... We had this really short window of a relationship that was, like, both convinced we were fully in love with each other, looking back for what we were not, Paul.
Right.
But at the time, it was like, this is... And we lived in Northampton, kind of thing. So one day we were like, let's just go to London.
Yeah.
I just decided... I mean, I haven't really been to London before. And just the whole day, just going sightseeing. I remember just going to this record shop. It'd be like, I've got to buy an album to remember the day by.
Sure.
And it's that.
Wow. Says it all, really.
That is the album that if I wanted to remember that day in my life, I'd have to listen to that. Which
wow.
So
you've just opened all those wounds there.
Yeah. It's come up and gone, no, that's why the relationship didn't work. That absolutely was an omen, that album.
Insistence on playing that album over and over again.
Yeah, just listen to it all the way home.
Killed it.
I listened to that album. I mean, yeah. I mean, I've played that album seven tracks of that as well.
I'm just getting into it there. To be fair, though, I was quite enjoying it. Yeah,
the rhythm started to kick in at the end there.
It did. I was starting to feel it. It kind of reminded me of Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Iggy Pop puts a bit more effort in, I'd say.
It depends what day you get.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. To be honest, to be fair, I'm giving him a bit too much credit there.
I saw him at the Isle of Wight a couple of years ago, and he was absolutely amazing, kind of staggered on, played this incredible set. And as he left the stage, like literally a minute later, he just ran back on, totally infused, and just screamed out, "Fuck you!" And then just walked off. It was amazing. And then the whole audience was just an absolute shock. It was like, where did that come from?
Fuck yeah, well, fuck you.
Then fuck you! Cheersy.
One of the things I really love is people say fuck you to, to a group of people or anyone or just one person.
It's really,
it's really funny.
Yeah, obviously, really upsetting.
That's a little delve into your life, but I think with time now, I think I'm going to play one track. I'd say you've already won.
Right, let's try it.
So let's see what happens. Here we go. Track one. Here we go. Oh, hold on a second. Here we go. Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Highs achieved.
Oh, that'll do.
Yeah. Since every day I love you less and less and less and less. I know I feel it in my bones. I'm sick, I'm tired, I'm staying in control. Oh, yes. Since every day I love you less and less and less and less. I know I feel it in my bones. I'm sick, I'm tired, I'm staying in control. Every Day I Love You Less and Less by the Kaiser Chiefs, which is, you know, appropriately named song, because that's probably how their fans have felt about them.
Since they started. First album.
Yeah, yeah. Their first album was massive. Mm. And then, I think, isn't it like, actually, like, historically, their second album was the biggest drop off in terms of sales? Or something like that.
Oh, really? Wow.
I've read an article about it where, like, they sold so much that first one, and that second one was such a massive drop.
Just absolutely bombed.
Yeah,
second
it was
album
like,
syndrome.
Yeah.
Wow.
But huge. I think it's more of an issue now because, like, bands get built up so much to be, like, the band, you know, the flavour of the month.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess there's so much pressure on the second album as well, isn't it? It's, you know, if you sort of introduce the world with your first album, you probably had years to get it right.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you explode, and then you've got a tiny window to bring out the second album and catch the sales, I guess. So,
yeah
I've often read that a lot of bands feel rushed when it comes to that second album.
They should not spend long on the first album, that's my opinion.
No, absolutely. I have the second one, you know, in reserve.
Yeah, that first one, just write the first one in a few months. Release that.
Exactly.
There's a lot of bands on that point. Magic Numbers, I remember.
Yeah.
That first album. And then the second one, they were like, they did an interview with him and he went, yeah, it's crazy because, you know, I spent so long on that first one and this second one, I love it. And, you know, I just wrote it in the back of my bus.
Brilliant. I'll pay attention for that.
But no one's buying it. I saw their rider, Magic Numbers.
Did you?
Yeah, I saw their rider at a gig. Loads of magic stars, Milky Way magic stars.
Right.
Stuff like that. It's because I was told not to, really strictly by a bouncer. So I was like, well, I'm going to nick them.
We just set a challenge, didn't they?
Yeah, had a lot of chocolate, a lot of really nice. A
lot of chocolate.
Nice treats, the Magic Numbers.
Did they?
Do you remember when they refused to play on Top of the Pops?
No.
Because they were there, all ready to go, and whoever was introducing them made a joke about them all being fat.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so something like...
That's pretty harsh.
You know, two fat ladies, 88, or something like that. You know, what was it? Richard Bacon. Amanda says. Richard Bacon. He called him a big fat talent. There you go. Two Fat Ladies 88, which is my joke that I would do about the Magic Numbers. At least it involves numbers, you know.
Exactly, much funnier.
There you go. Richard Bacon, often the centre of controversy.
He is, yeah. Just can't help himself, can he?
And then they just didn't play. They went, forget it.
I thought it was because somebody had nicked their chocolate. I thought it was down to you again.
Because that was me stuffing my face like Hansel and Gretel in backstage.
So James Acaster there. Yeah, the chocolate around his chops.
Yeah, loving it. They refused to go on, so Milky Way Magic Stars are not where they left them. I love a bit of bacon controlling. Also, I love bacon. He wound up Psychic Sally. Did you see that?
I didn't.
Psychic Sally. What are your views on mediums and psychics?
It's generally a lot of bollocks, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see if I redeem myself now, basically. Here we go. Next track from my iPod. Oh, that's another film one. It's from Drive.
Okay.
It's Under Your Spell by Desire.
Oh, great. We'll be right back.
Desire. That's two films from soundtracks we've had already. I think that's what I think every time we have an actor in, it conjures up the.
Yeah. That's Sally at work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Conjuring up these film soundtracks.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing.
She knows exactly what she's doing. Tuned into us.
Did you enjoy Drive?
I did, yeah. A gorgeous looking film and, yeah, quite simple. I think that's the trick of that. Simplicity of it.
Also, I've realised that both soundtracks. here's a bit of gatekeeping, I want to say now. But both of the. Inside Llewyn Davis and Drive both star Oscar Isaac. So there you go.
There's a connection.
He's in both of them. If we can get another. I've not got any more songs that I think he appears in the films on my iPod.
Right, yeah. We'll have to get him in next week.
Who knows? Oscar Isaac can be the next guest. Yeah. Just talk to him.
Yeah.
Don't see why not. Let's talk about Deus Ex Machina. Good film. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't, no.
Lots of debates about okay. if it's feminist or not.
Sure.
Because I think the director claimed it was.
Okay. How did you feel?
I went in not knowing any of that, that there was any debates about it whatsoever. And I just thought it was a good film.
Right.
Because basically, I think one of the criticisms levelled at it is that there's like two men, two women in the film.
Right.
And the women are, you know, getting naked and stuff.
Sure.
And the men are not. But then the women are robots that have been invented by a man who is a misogynist.
Right, okay.
So I think it's meant to be like he is a bad.
Yeah.
This is why it's not good, and this is what if a misogynistic asshole guy
makes a
robot, he's going to make it a sexy lady that gets naked for him.
Yeah.
And this is why men aren't good. You know, so like I felt like it's like, but then also there's a lot of, I mean, I can't really say much more about giving away the plot. There's some stuff like the personality that the main female robot has. It's like, oh, this is how we're meant to see women, is it?
Right.
But again, it's a person that's been programmed into her by the misogynist.
Sure. So again, it's working on that level.
Yeah, yeah. And he doesn't come off good in it.
Doesn't.
Either. So, like, it's a thing you kind of go,
Interesting choice.
Track two from yours now.
Right.
There's not much that can go wrong here.
I don't know. I'm preparing myself for a fall here.
But let's see. Here we go. Paul Cassar's iPod. Track two. Let's see. It's another cool band's block party.
Oh, go on. I love that.
It's golden era. Party plans from Silent Alarm. Paul, you're absolutely on a winning streak here.
I'm feeling quite cocky.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's had like just two very. Also, from the same era.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can sort of start to get an idea of my musical tastes, I guess.
Yeah, I remember when that first came around, I didn't buy any of it.
Sure.
Because I was like, oh, everyone's into this.
Yeah,
and I was listening to Sunburned Hand of the Man.
Wow.
But I was like, oh, I don't want to buy that. So I didn't listen to any of it. And it's only recently, like, I think in January I bought that album. That Block Party
I
album.
Guess that's the beauty of music, isn't it? You can sort of go back and discover it at any time.
Yeah, and there's things that you're behind on. There's some bands that are too, I think their back catalogue is so, like Block Party, you can just go, I'll get that first album, sure, and I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
There's some bands that are so intimidating, so their back catalogue is like, well, where? Like Radiohead.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Ian Boldsworth on FUBAR Radio.
We're now here with Tom, your new actor, new youngster on the block.
Yeah, really young. My whole
youngster
life ahead
on
of
the
me.
Block, Tom Mayton, promising, most promising youngster.
Yes.
Yeah.
You see the
I'm sure you were
eyes.
That once, weren't you?
When I was about 13,
yeah, I'm
did
sure
a really good sketch.
I'm sure you were tipped for great things in Edinburgh 99.
Edinburgh 99.
Same as I was.
The last century.
It was. Fuck yeah, God almighty, it was I. Yeah. So Tom's here.
Hello.
I know Tom.
I know you know Tom.
We go
did
way
you
back.
Know that when you booked him though?
Yeah, because I'd actually text you and said, Tom coming on the show, and you said, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you said you wanted clearing. I cleared you for the show, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean?
I could have said no.
Clearing system.
I could have said no. I regularly
system.
Say no.
Yeah, there's some people who
and
say
no. And by the
who
way.
Wants to get on this?
We had a Zippy from Rainbow on it.
Yeah.
You blocked him.
Only 3 hours ago, Hacker T Dog from Children's BBC was sat where you're sat right
no.
now.
Yes,
he was sat
my
there.
My daughter likes
driving. Have you got a daughter?
Yeah. And a son.
What the fuck? What has happened? You can't have kids.
I've got loads of secret kids.
When did you get children?
I've got an 11-year-old and a baby.
I've seen you since then. We've done stuff together since then.
Yeah, I know. I just didn't tell you.
It's best, isn't it?
Because of this sort of reaction.
Yeah. I don't want to have to explain my life. So, yeah, I cleared you, and I often don't. Comedy people, generally speaking, I don't clear.
Okay,
I'm not
lucky.
I don't think I view you. I don't think I see you as a comedy person.
I don't
really.
See me as a comedy person.
I see you more as a sort of a thing, like a sort
right.
of a.
Keep talking.
No, I'm trying to word this nice. More of a
an
sort
entity.
Of an energy. Do you know what
I'll
I mean?
Take that.
Yeah,
I've always
seen you.
I think that's better, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And even, do you know what? Even you and Steve together. So Steve Oram, who you're in a day. Yeah, he's still a double act.
Still doing so.
In that
mantle. Oh well, Back in Times is a
last week. Got a gig last week.
Got a gig last week.
Good luck with that.
Went really well,
didn't it? Given how you described it to me in the break, I'm not sure it did. But that was always the beauty of you and Steve. When I saw you and Steve on stage, as it was, I'm more rooted for it to not go well.
Yeah, well, I think we
because that's kind of funnier, isn't it?
Become more entertaining when it
have
goes
you?
Badly. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
everyone
yeah, yeah.
does.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really.
Yeah, definitely.
Although
yeah.
I sometimes would get quite aggressive. Steve was a bit mellower on stage, and I'd get a bit sort of angrier.
Mm. Well, let's go back. We will talk about your film.
Yes,
but let's go back to the day when I first met you, when you were performing a character, which, by the way, I never learnt the name of.
Describe it.
No, it was Tommy Fate or
oh,
Tommy
yeah.
Face.
Tommy
I
Fate.
Used to call it Tommy Face.
That
and then
good.
John Williams, who was in Big and Daff with me and Rob Rouse, said to me, "No, it's Tommy Fate." And I went, "That doesn't make sense." And he was like, "And Tommy Face does." But I was sure it was Tommy Face. So I just paused.
Tommy.
Just paused for fireworks.
Excuse
look,
me.
You mentioned Tommy Fate.
Yeah.
Boom.
Mentioned Tommy Fate in London.
It was Tommy Fate, Mike, because my opening line, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Was, hello everybody, my name's Tommy Fate. That's Fate as in. Oh no, fuck, I was about to do it the wrong way around. That's fate as in destiny and not church. That was
so,
my
it's either that sort of
line.
That opening line or still had your name wrong. Maybe I'm still walking back
you
from the stage.
Understand it.
Never heard the opening line.
I probably said it like that.
So I used to always like you a lot, even though you weren't overly reliable as an act.
Why?
No, not reliable.
No, he wasn't, though. That's not even
up.
A diss. No, yeah, no, right. Professional.
Yeah,
reliable
yeah, professional,
as in
reliable.
But quite erratic.
It wouldn't
okay.
always take with the audience, not always.
Right,
and
right.
again, I liked it more when it didn't,
some
which is a bit.
Really turned sick. Against it.
Yeah, but I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And then I saw you and Steve Oram together, and I always enjoyed you two together and stuff. And
we
then.
Die then?
Not always. You were, we had a bit more interaction with each other then. You know, something a bit more knowing about it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's safer, isn't it, as you know?
Yeah.
Safer with a pal.
But Tommy Fate was more you didn't know it definitely wasn't real. Whereas well, with a double act, you know that they're doing an act.
Yes.
But Tommy Faye, it was like, is it? This might be a because you're good at, you're a proper good actor.
Oh, thank
no,
you.
But you are though. So
does he know what he's doing?
Yeah.
Well, that's you know that's an in, well, Andy Kaufman is always an
yeah.
inspiring figure, and he dealt with that quite a lot.
Mackenzie was similar, I think, doing Bagshaw.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So when Mackenzie Crotty used the teacher character. That was all. Again, audience would take that at absolute face value.
Right.
Like, as if you go, why is there a school teacher here? And why is he... He's addressed the construct in the room, but your children, yet you still believe this is a real teacher. Like, it was bizarre.
It's because you just sort of got furious, and they kind of went with his furious...
Yeah. It was convincing, kind of like, wasn't it? Yeah.
Actually getting told off at school.
Yeah, totally. So then, you now, I always, whenever I see you, I want to talk about Banzai. Not Banzai.
No.
Blunder.
Hello.
You were in Banzai as well, but that got banned, of course, didn't it? The episode that Tom was in Banzai was banned because they said it was a quote was something like, it has to be a real one. So it was something like that.
What?
Anyway, we can't talk about it. It's a legal thing. E4 got in big trouble.
Okay,
so
you can't talk about
it. Tom wasn't in Banzai. Forget I ever mentioned it.
I've never heard of it. Don't worry.
Forget the quote, it has to be a real one, right? Just forget that.
Let's talk about Blunder,
which I've said this about a few things in my life, but I do maintain it's one of the things in my life that has made me laugh more than anything else. That, and you know what I'm on about.
I know. I'm pretty sure I know what you're on about.
Did you see any Blunder?
Remind me about Blunder.
This was a sketch show.
Didn't really watch it other than Tom's bit.
Was it on Channel 4?
Yeah. With Channel 4.
Did it have a character called the Baron in it?
Yes, that was Tom.
I do remember it. And I'm trying to remember who was in it with you.
Wasn't the Baron that was the one that,
was it,
that
I
got
think
me.
I know
everyone loved the Baron.
But yes. I think I know the one, the Kung Fu, the kicking. Yeah.
Yes, Karate Johnson.
That's
that
it.
That character.
And
holy
why?
Shit.
And why do people remember that character?
It's memorables.
Mm-hmm. It is memorables, isn't
get
it?
Yes.
So you'd be just go and look it on YouTube. Please go and look it on YouTube. Blunder in
Karate Johnson.
Just put Blunder Karate, you'll find it.
Don't watch it in front of your kids.
You'd be all right.
Although it's the funny bit of the anatomy.
Yeah.
It's not the
It's hilarious that. Like, that's really funny. And I like the one where you break your leg. There's one in the series where didn't you like knack your leg?
Oh, probably.
For real?
You did? I remember you did that. There was one kick you did and it snapped your hamstring or something.
Ooh. Oh no, well that was doing it live. That wasn't for the TV.
Oh, I thought that was one of them episodes.
No, I did that live.
Well, you limp after one of them.
Because I didn't really warm up properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you create that character?
And
No, it was a team of writers.
No, what I mean is...
No, it was in America. You had about 40 writers there in
conflict. So you obviously were happy to have the balls, like you put that in yourself.
It's like, the balls
I think
a writer turned up and said, I've done this character where you do a bit of karate, and Tom went, what? Well, we should make it funny.
There will be plenty of shows where that happens. Plenty.
I actually, that character came about because I tried on my girlfriend's pants, and I was doing karate in them, and then my balls fell out the side. And she went, that's funny.
Yeah, and then you just thought, well should I call him Johnson?
Johnson balls, karate balls.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Todger. Taekwondo Todger. Don't know. Karate Johnson.
Well, I mean, does it annoy you that for all your achievements, that's the one that I think?
That's the best budget. What about the best thing?
Isn't it funny, though? Oh, it is funny.
What happened to him? Karate Johnson.
Well, I got a bit old and I matured. And also my balls.
Yeah, a bit lower.
Yeah, a bit too low.
He found that he was stepping on his balls a lot.
So he
became an ability.
I'm not sure it's Ali J, or I'm not sure it's like Alan Partridge is a better example. I'm not sure that Karate Johnson has any length of, like, longevity to it.
For a new generation who would be like, I'm not sure who's this Karate Johnson. Go to YouTube.
Yeah, go to YouTube. I don't think Tom
it's a highly worked out character. I don't know what you mean.
I don't think Tom even needs to be there anymore. Just tell him the idea.
I can franchise it.
Like Puppetry of the Famous. Just going for half an hour. What do we do? Right, it's honestly that simple. £1,500, please. Thank you.
Sarah Love and Mice Diggy on FUBAR Radio.
Right now,
getting into something super, super special. Have you ever seen Big Daddy Kane live? Any of you guys?
I haven't, no.
No, never mind.
I would like to.
I think I saw it, but it was on YouTube, probably. No, I feel like I have seen him live, but I can't remember where it was.
I didn't bother.
But yeah, he's a live show is next level. He's one of them dudes that you go, oh, shit! You know, he just did so-and-so.
I got to catch up with Daddy Kane, and this is what he had to say as Fubar.
Well, I mean, I guess with me doing a live show is always thinking out of the box, you know, trying to do something on stage that I know no other rapper would do, you know, something that, you know, I may have seen from a rock star or R&B star or somebody like that, that, you know, that people in hip hop just don't do, you know, because it's like now it's like you're kind of introducing something different to your genre of music.
Definitely, because when I see your show, I think of people like the Temptations and classic performers. You know, you're bringing a lot of that etiquette to the hip-hop forum. Like, are you influenced by any of those kind of soul legends?
That's all I listen to. I listen to soul music more than I listen to hip-hop, you know, for real. Like, I love Marvin Gaye, David Ruffin, Isaac Hayes, Willie Hutch. All that stuff.
Oh, you're a man after my own heart. I'm a massive Marvin Gaye fan. Like, he's one of my all-time favorite artists. Who for you is your all-time favorite non-hip-hop music artist?
If it was vocally, I'd probably have to say Marvin Gaye. If it was production-wise, I'd probably have to say Willie Hutch.
Ill. And what about MCs then? Who is your all-time single favorite MC?
Grandmaster Caz from the Cold Crush Brothers.
Why Caz?
I mean, that's pretty much, he's pretty much my teacher. Like, when I was young and first heard Cold Crush, I used to really mimic my style after his. He was just that dude that had all the slick rhymes. Like, the stuff he said on old Cold Crush tapes was stuff that I couldn't wait to go to school the next day and, like, you know, say to my boys, you know, like he said all that slick stuff, you know.
I love it. And you know what breaks my heart, though, is there's so many young cats who are into rap music, but they have no idea who Caz or Melly Mel is. Why are these artists still important to consider when we talk about rap music today?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm just one of them cats that believe you got to know where you came from, you know, in order to get to where you're going. You know, I'm just one of those type of dudes. So, you know, I love to study my history, you know, and get a better understanding, you know, so that, you know, I know what I'm about to face and I know how to deal with it.
Yes, exactly. I'm definitely of that school of thought. You being someone who a lot of people see as really an archetypal figure in hip-hop, what was your first ever memory of hip-hop?
My first memory of hip-hop, I guess, would be going to a block party and hearing the DJ cutting up one of the disco breaks, like Good Times or Bounce Rock, Skate Roll, Super Sperm. Seeing cats, like when they start cutting them up, seeing cats that jump out in the middle and start popping and whatnot. You know, something like that.
I'm so jealous. I wish I could have been there as well, though. But when you think about them times being at a park jam then, could you have imagined that hip-hop would have turned into arguably the most influential genre of the 20th century?
Absolutely. I always knew that hip-hop was going to be very, very big, and I always knew that it was here to stay, just for the simple fact that when it began, the way people talked about it, like, that's not real music, that's just a bunch of noise, they not even singing. Like, these are like the same comments that people made about rock and roll, and you see what happened with that, you know.
Playing devil's advocate, though, you see how there's some hip-hop cats who they might say that about trap music and stuff. I mean, I'm far from any kind of expert on trap, but how do you see this new wave of rap? Do you see that having the longevity and turning into a legacy in the same sense?
I think the trap music will probably last up until cats find something new to get high off of. I think that right now, while you got young cats that's popping these pills and messing with heroin and drinking that syrup, you know, stuff to make you sleepy and nodding off like that, trap is going to be real strong. Because it's kind of like, you know, how the psychedelic music was in the 60s for all the weed smokers and heroin addicts and all the cats back then. And ones that are taking mushrooms and all that stuff. You know, it's that space stuff, that and acid, people that was that whole doing is taking acid and all that. It's trap music is the music for that. Just something that you can nod off to and just zone out to when you high. And I think that once people, you know, adapt to a new drug or whatever, or decide to clean up, or whatever the case may be. Hopefully it's clean up, but whatever the case may be, I think that's when trap will die.
Obviously, there were drug issues in the hood back in the day, but then we had people to look up to who was teaching the way of how we get ourselves out of this mess. When you think of someone like Chuck D, or we have people schooling the kids in the hood kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole are trying to do that. I think that they're trying to preserve hip-hop, and they're trying to make music the way that they were taught hip-hop is done. You know, I just think that they're two incredible lyricists that's probably still having a tough time learning how to become artists to really, I guess, make other artists want to follow suit and make other artists want to step their game up to be on their level.
It's very true. No, and I've been relieved to see the amount of buzz that is around Kendrick at the moment, because at least he's someone who's given a different sort of dialogue.
You'll see a whole bunch of artists trying to do what Kendrick do, trying to do what J. Cole do, because I think these are very, very talented dudes. It's just that I just think that they need to build up, like, as artists, stronger, you know, to really create that type of fan base. They have a big fan base, but it's in a different way. It's in a way of, like, you know, people loving their music. But I think once, you know, they learn how to make people really just identify with them. Like, I don't know if you know how it was, like, back in the days, like, during the New Edition era. It was the type of thing where if it was a household with three sisters, in their bedroom, they would have a New Edition poster hanging up. But yeah, then over each sister bed, they would have a picture of which member they like. One would have a picture of Bobby, another one have a picture of Ralph, another one have a picture of Ronnie. You know, like, that's what I'm talking about. That type of star power where it's like, they identify with you in that way, you know?
No, but also on a deeper than just superficial, like, this is a marketing scheme fan base, do you know what I mean? Because I see it as you have such a complete package as an artist, because you have this amazing catalogue, crazy rhymes, but then at the same time you bring it in the live forum too. So I want to see someone like a Kendrick cover all of them kind of bases as well. Do you think that's important at all nowadays?
I think that that's very, very important. I mean, I think that, you know, some of the young cats, once they really understand how to have that full package, it will be the type of thing where, okay, now your fans love you. They don't just love your music. They don't just love what you represent. They love you, you know?
Why do you think your fans and hip-hop love Big Daddy Kane so much?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because of what you said about the whole full package thing. I don't know. That could be one of the reasons, you know? Could be something else.
I think you really get your money's worth as a Big Daddy Kane fan. But recently, there have been a lot of talk about rejuvenating this whole battle thing between you and Rakim. Where are you at with all of that whole discussion?
I mean, you know, it's funny to me. I mean, I think it's beautiful that there's hip-hop fans that, you know, damn near 30 years later still talk about something like that, you know. I mean, I think that's cool, you know. But at the same time, I mean, you know, I think that that's like, you know, the Tyson Holyfield fight. It's something, you know, that you wanted to see, but it, you know, it just happened a little too late. you know.
Can I just say that I love you both as artists, but I don't want to see that battle happen now. Like, how do you take that, me telling you that honestly from my heart? I hope you take that in the best way possible.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, I mean, I could completely understand that. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, me and Rakim, you know, we're not kids anymore. I haven't had a battle in I don't know how long. I don't know if Rakim has had a battle, you know. I mean, I don't get it twisted. I can still handle mine. I'm just saying I haven't, you know, had one. So, I mean, it's like, you know, I enjoy getting out on the stage and rocking the crowd, doing what I do. And that's fun to me. You know, me and Rakim, we do shows together from time to time, you know. But, I mean, you know, battling him is not really that important to me.
Fair enough.
James Acaster on Fubar Radio.
Marcus Bentley, hello.
Hi, Jim.
My guest today, Marcus Bentley, best known as the voice of Big Brother. Not of Big Brother, because that's other people, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
so you want to be, you're not Big Brother yourself.
I'm the narrator of Big Brother, tier 1 in the Big Brother house and all that jazz.
Yeah, yeah. Do people often recognise your voice? Or?
I try and keep quiet on the streets, really, so I stick out, you know, I'm going through London, I stick out like a sore thumb if I see anything. But occasionally, yeah, I see something and people go, oh my God, you're that bloke. It's all, don't see anything.
It's more the intonation of it, really, isn't it?
Rather than styly, isn't it? So, tier 1 in the Big Brother house last night, some of the housemates, bloody blah. Yeah,
I mean, they do all sorts in that house. That's like
we've been going 15 years, so they've done all sorts.
15 years now.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing it for 15 years?
Since since July the 12th or the 15th, I can't remember.
Wow,
2000, yeah.
I mean, that's right from the beginning. You got to tell everyone what the Nasty Nick stuff.
That was amazing. That was unfolding. Nasty Nick. That was when it really sort of just went mental.
Yeah.
There was a famous DJ, she'll not be named, giving on the radio, on one of the main BBC radios, 50 ways to kill Nasty Nick.
Wow.
I don't think you could do that these days.
No, especially to a man who basically just smuggled in a pen and paper. Like, you know, I think
that was the highlight of the series. Basically, why we're still here. Yeah. 15 years later.
But
have we got any music?
We are here to talk about music. We're putting our iPods on shuffle. I'll put mine on first.
You put yours on first.
And then we'll go on to yours next. So let's see what my one throws up first. So here we go. Track 1. I'm here with Marcus Bentley. Is Flipper. No prizes for guessing what the song's called. That's from the album Generic Flipper. Good album. That song, well, good as an album, I'd say. Individual tracks, a little bit hard going, but
what genre would you see that? That to me, that's some sort of hardcore punk, but is it not?
Kind of punky indie music. Yeah, it's I'd say indie punk, maybe. Yeah, punky indie, but it's a good. Good little, it's a fun little cult album, that is, what that is.
Eclectic.
Yeah. Marcus, I was going to ask you as well, what kind of music do you have on your iPod? Are you,
Well, My favourite band ever is REM.
Lovely.
They're my favourite band
Lovely
ever.
Stuff.
And I went to see them, oh God, when I was a kid, 84. That was the first time. I mean, I didn't know. It was the Newcastle Ballroom. And they were, and I, my mate really liked them.
Yeah.
And he took us and we went and I didn't know what to expect. And this bloke came on stage who was Michael Stipe.
Yeah.
And he had a skinhead.
Yeah.
And he had a hoodie, which was a ripped pocket hanging off. And Black Dr. Martens, and he just, I thought he was a roadie, and I just started singing a little weird ditty, and then the band came on, and wow, blew me away. And then we saw them. That I think I worked out once. We saw that was about the October, and then we saw them at Manchester Ballroom in the March, when the Fables of the Reconstruction album came out. And this time he had white peroxide hair, spiky, and he had a velvet smoking jacket on.
Lovely.
It was amazing. And this ball in Manchester had sprung floor, and the whole of it was boom, boom. Yeah. It was amazing. So that was one of my favourite gigs I've ever been to. So I love REM.
That's great. I mean, you were going to see REM before most people knew who REM were.
I remember I'd been at drama school in about 1990, I think. And they had a really famous album called Out of Time.
Yes.
And that was the album that was really mega.
Yeah.
And I was it was in this posh street. I was amazed on a cup of coffee. And this really sort of middle class woman and her kids came in. And it was LPs and probably cassettes and the odd CD in those days. And she had an REM Out of Time album there. And it. Yeah. I was gutted.
Was
gutted.
It's hard, isn't it?
And then they went mega, about 95, they went absolutely mega with Automatic for the People and then Monster. They had this tour with where they were supported by Radiohead, all over the world tour. And after that, they slowly fell back into being a cult band again, even though with a mega sort of contract with Warner Brothers. But they weren't on everyone's other, a bit like
albums,
you know,
like Up and stuff.
Yeah.
A bit more, you know.
Great tunes, and some of those tunes, if they'd released them earlier in their careers, they would have been as famous as Man on the Moon or whatever now. But
I think my two favourite REM albums are New Adventures in Hi-Fi.
That's one of my favourites.
And Up.
Yeah.
I think those two are the ones we really love.
So they're my favourites. But I love bands like the Pixies and I've got a bit of hardcore on here myself, like people like Minor Threat. And,
great.
I love the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about if I could choose one of my songs, I'd choose a Beastie Boy track.
Yeah.
And I remember, I remember that when he died the year, one of the members, and. It was Coldplay were in concert, and I don't particularly like Coldplay. I think they're great, but there's not something I'd play. And he sang, you've got Chris Martin, live on stage. The Beastie Boy died that day.
Yeah.
Adam Yauch, as he called.
Yeah.
He died that day, and he sang at the piano in a slow sort of really mournful lilt.
Yeah.
You've got to fight for your right to party. And it brought a lump to my throat. Such a lovely sort of thing.
Yeah,
to do.
Yeah.
You know, because they were amazing, you know.
That's
when
so
they
good.
First started, I remember they were just the brats, weren't they? You know, almost like a comic band, and then they became such a sort of a highly acclaimed.
But they were one of the first bands, the reason why we have parental advisory stickers on stuff. They were one of the first ones that people
their album?
Something like that, I think it might have been that one, where it's like people like, we need to warn people about this before they buy it, because there was so much naughty stuff.
That was both. 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, it would have been
30 years
more.
Ago, mate.
I think that would have been very long.
I can't do my maths.
It's been a long time ago.
Yeah, so, and I love the Pixies and like a bit of Killing Joke and a bit of. I was a bit young for all that when it all first came out, but.
Right.
And my mate, I remember going to drama school, my mate was even younger than me, and I'd say, how on earth are you into these things? Because I was too young for these things like The Damned and the Sex Pistols and whatever, but you loved them and.
Well, now you kind of people
the Smiths.
Like,
I guess that was when I was sort of early teenagers. The Smiths and brilliant bands like that. But there's brilliant bands in every era, isn't there? And
Do you want to pass your
book here?
Pass your thing over. We'll see what it throws up. I love it if after all that chat, it now just like throws up. Oh no, I'm looking at it. I can't see how you put this on shuffle, Marcus. You're listening to FUBAR.
Is it going out? That is. Radiation that haunts dismembered constellations, a faintly glimmering radio station. Beyond the suns that guard this roof, beyond.
beyond your flowers of flaming truth, beyond your latest ad campaigns. An old man sits collecting stamps in a room all filled with Chinese lamps. He saves what others throw away. He says that he'll be rich someday.
The song is called Frank Sinatra. Who's the band?
Kirk.
Lovely. And you said you heard that on The Sopranos?
Yeah, I think it was at the beginning or the end, but I imagine it was a fat Tony Soprano walking down the paper to get down the drive to get his paper.
Yeah, you can imagine him walking along to that looking pretty tough.
Yeah.
It was nice. I'd like to make a playlist of songs that are named after other musicians as well. Buddy Holly by Weezer, that would be one that was on there. So I think LCD Sound System did Daft Punk Is Playing At My House. That was a big one.
Well,
I think you can make a whole album based on that kind of stuff.
You got me thinking.
It's kind of it's quite hard, isn't it, when you start properly thinking about it. But I'm sure we could think of more. That was nice, man. Are you a big Sopranos fan?
I love The Sopranos.
See, I've never seen it.
Well, do you know what? A few lads have said that to me lately. I thought, you got to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
All those references you miss in GMs, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know what? That probably finished 10 years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, it would have finished a long time ago.
Yeah.
Who's got time to watch all of the box sets? But that one is one of the ones where you kind of think, I should.
Mind you, it is pretty violent and it's, you know.
I like that kind of stuff. I like a bit of violence.
You know.
Well, yesterday I watched The Purge. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I don't know why I watched The Purge. I've got Netflix and I'm going through it. There's so many options of things that I could watch, and I watched The Purge, which had been given one star, but I thought I've always heard of The Purge, and I think it's an interesting idea that it's in a future where there's one night a year where everything's legal, you can do whatever you like.
All I saw that advertised on a bus stop last year.
Yeah, and so you're allowed to kill people if you want, and just what people would do. And I thought I'd watch that. It really depressed me. Really?
Did it deserve more than one star?
Maybe two stars, but I'll probably double the star rating.
Yeah.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Raxu, hello.
How you doing? You all right?
Really good. How are you all doing?
We're good, but Jamal looks like, I don't know, Jam, where are you? What are you doing?
He's out for a walk, I think.
You're all right, mate.
What?
I'm here. He's got his mask on. Safety first.
Yeah, always safety first. We like that bit of safety conscious Raxu. How are you guys doing? How's the lockdown been treating you?
Good. For me, it's been... It was just more about just trying to... It was fun. A little bit monotonous at times because it was just more for me just trying to get better at things as kind of the months went on. And it was kind of weird because I didn't see the boys. I didn't see the people who I'd normally see. We couldn't go out and do anything. So everything was just centered around just trying to get better at what I had in my bedroom or what I could order from on Amazon.
What did you order from Amazon? Anything you can tell us?
Jamal's on Android, so
I feel like that cut out just as we were getting to a good bit as well.
Well, but how about for the rest of you? How's it been?
It's been gone, Miles.
No, you go.
No, you go.
Someone go.
To be fair, it's been slightly a blessing, to be fair, because for the past couple of years we've been on the road a lot, and we haven't actually spent that much time with family and close ones. So for me personally, it helped kind of, I was around my family for a long, long time, and I kind of realized there's a lot of love there.
Yeah.
It's been a blessing definitely for me.
For me, it's been good for me personally, just because of my accident in February. It gave me enough time to heal. Mm-hmm. So whereas I like to obviously be active and do a lot of stuff and kind of go to the gym and stuff, I think lockdown for me, just because of my accident, made me stay indoors, and because I was high risk, basically just worry about my health for a bit and stay inside. And it allowed me to set up a gaming system. So, yeah.
Ideal.
How are exactly. you feeling now? Are you feeling better, Miles?
Yeah, I'm good, Bobby. I've had two gym sessions now. So I went to the gym today and yesterday, and I'm feeling good. I'm feeling strong, and I'm getting my strength back gradually, and I'm cycling more and running more now. I still look like a Swiss roll at the moment, but it's all right. We don't worry about that.
And for those who might not know, can you talk to us about your accident? What happened?
Yeah, so basically I was in Andorra, went on a family holiday, and I was snowboarding with my brother and his mate, and we went over an extra large jump, landed the jump, ended up damaging my lung. My lung collapsed and had 30% full of blood, and ruptured my spleen 16 centimetres and broke 4 ribs. So, yeah.
Pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, man, I'm a thrill seeker. It's epic.
No, you were a thrill seeker. You are
no, I'm still
am. Any sports like that ever again.
Still a thrill seeker.
But like you kind of said, almost good timing, because at least with the lockdown, you didn't have to kind of worry so much about work.
No, exactly. And to think, when I was in hospital, before lockdown happened, obviously we had our tour scheduled for April. I think it was April, right?
Yeah.
And we had our tour scheduled for April, and I was in hospital till I think March the 3rd, and I was like, lads, don't worry, we don't have to cancel the tour. It's fine. I'm gonna be all right. I spent a week and a half learning how to walk again, and I basically couldn't breathe up till recently. So I don't know why I thought it was okay to try and tell the boys that I was going to do the tour.
And he's also, I was going to say, yeah, you were underplaying this. You didn't just tell us. You literally argued and got pissed off at the thought of us cancelling it.
Yeah, exactly.
So well, it made the jungle look like an holiday. It made the jungle look like an holiday then.
Oh, yeah, honestly, it was. But I'd rather have been back in the jungle drinking pig's anus than having my accident again, to be honest. So. Yeah.
But it hasn't all been good times over the last few months, to say the least. And you guys have been quite vocal about the Black Lives Matter issue and all of the things that have come out of that. How's that been for you? And are you glad to be able to use your voices to say something?
Yeah, I think it's been a really difficult time, to be honest with you. And I think the incident triggered a lot of people.
You mean George Floyd?
Yeah, I think that we grow up in a society where obviously you see violence, right? Whether it be in video games or in films or in music videos, but we have a certain image of what that violence is like. I don't think anyone was prepared to see a life taken away in such a calm, considered manner. Like, it made it really, really harrowing. It was like there was no anger, there was no struggle, there was no conflict, no fight. It was just the systematic taking of a life. And so I know that even a lot of friends that we had that were Black, I had conversations with them and they were just telling me how they felt about it. And then on the plus side, a lot of friends that were white or weren't Black of different races coming to me saying, look, what can we do to support, or how can we kind of better ourselves and be more aware of our prejudice going forward? So it was good from that perspective. And for us as a group, we understand that we have quite a young audience and an audience which is open to hearing what we say. And I think we're all quite good at talking. So I guess we have the power to deliver a message which has been delivered before, but maybe in a slightly different way to a different audience to help people open their eyes and I guess try and create a better future.
Yeah, it's so amazing when people like to use a platform for good like that. And I know Miles in particular mentioned recently about racist trolling and stuff. Is that something all you boys receive on social media? Do you get that a lot?
I mean, obviously, I've spoken about mine. So, yeah, for me, it's been I've had it a numerous amount of times. But for the boys, obviously, they'll have to speak for themselves. But I most definitely probably know, hand on heart, that they probably have experienced it for sure.
Yeah. It's a shame as well, because out of the 100 comments that are positive, you get that one comment that kind of like sticks. And it's like, really? Really? It's like, are we still at the age where we're still doing that stupid shit? But yeah, unfortunately, I think people just need to call it out.
Yeah.
The more people that call out, the more people speak up about it, the more it will kind of help fight it.
Well, and I think, yeah, a lot of these people just do it for a reaction. And then when they really get a strong reaction from people, you know, you're not going to keep it. People will stop doing it, you know, eventually. It's like, you know.
We'd like to hope so, yeah.
You've just got to call it out. That's the thing. But you've done a charity single, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so the song's called Who Am I? And the money from that's going to Black Minds Matter, which is basically a charity that help put on counselling sessions for people who are going through things and they can't fund it for themselves at that moment in time. Because as well as racism, I guess mental health is also something which is quite close to us. And as far as the song goes, it was the first thing that we put out, which is produced by Miles, which was a moment in itself, to be honest, because I think I was playing the piano. And Miles took what I was playing and turned that into the instrumental that it was. So I guess for a lot of reasons, it's one that was really close to us. One, because of what we were speaking about within it. Two, because of how captivated we were by John Boyega's speech, which was sampled. And three, as I said, Miles produced the instrumental as well.
Yeah, what was that like, Miles, doing all that side of things?
Well, I've been producing for years, a few years now, consistently. And obviously when we became full-time musicians, I took it more seriously. But I think over the last, I'll probably say 9 months to a year, I've got myself to a level where my production is able to go and we're able to use it. And I've had a few other artists as well using my production, and they're out on Spotify as well. But this one meant the most to me just because, one, it's our first released song that I produced, and two, just because of the reasoning behind it. You know, it means so much to us, and it's only right that because of our social following and who we are as people, we need to spread the word more. And you know, for me it wasn't more so about the production. Like I do love producing, I've done it for years now. It was just I wanted to kind of produce the best instrumental that would allow us to say what we're saying without having the instrumental take away from any of the lyricism, because I think the most powerful thing about that song is the lyrics. So for me, it was just learning how to not overproduce and obviously just produce enough just to get to that level where it sounds nice. But that's not the listening point for me personally. That's what I wanted to do with the production.
What's in store for the future for you guys? Like, moving forward, like, hopefully, touch wood, we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with COVID a little bit. Lockdown's easing up. Are there plans moving forward? New tour dates and...
So, at the moment, the tour's obviously been pushed back to February 2021. So we're really, really looking forward to that because, hopefully, fingers crossed, as you said, nothing changes and we can kind of keep that going. That's kind of... one of the biggest things that we're looking forward to. Also, there's new music. I feel like throughout the lockdown period, we had an opportunity to really like focus in on where we were going, what we wanted to do, and figure out some sort of plan of how we were going to get there. So at the moment, it feels like a bit more of a holistic approach. Like we feel like we're starting to get our ducks in a row and we just need to execute now and just need to be consistent. And I feel that with tour, we can do that. And with the things building up to tour, with the new music, with kind of new opportunities coming through, with going back out and, you know, doing shows and things like that, I feel like it's starting to feel like things are moving in the right direction. So hopefully this time next year will be, you know, even bigger and better.
That's all of us can hope for with what's been going on, I think. It's, but yeah, I mean, it sounds like...
You're damn right.
Like, Sounds like an exciting time once things are getting back to normal. Will there be any other reality TV shows in any of your futures?
Don't know. We don't know. Potentially, for me personally, I've done the reality shows that I wanted to do. Obviously, we won X Factor. I've done I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, which is arguably the biggest reality show in the world, while Keeping Up with the Kardashians. But I'm still hoping for Caitlin to get me on that. But you know, we could all wish.
You never know. Take me with you,
Bobby. You're the first one in line. You're coming with me.
Off to Calabasas, let's go.
Exactly.
This is not an audition, exactly. Bobby, I'm sorry. but what about for the rest of you? Would you guys do any other shows or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do Strictly. I don't know how good at it I'd be, but I think it would be really, really fun. Dancing on Ice, Ninja Warrior. Is anything fun, to be honest with you? I wouldn't want to do I'm a Celeb because I feel like that was really, really difficult. Yeah, I think being away from everybody for so long and having to do the task, but anything that's to do with, like, just fun, I'd be involved in personally.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.